Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for iOS Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
We've had 24 hours to process all the news from WWDC.
I haven't slept in that whole time just thinking about it. Plus, we've got some app caps, including a camera that's going to change the way you look at the world.
And if your iPhone is filling up with photos, I'm going to show you how to get rid of the duplicates.
It's all coming up next on iOS Today. iOS Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/iOS today. iOS Today time. Hello, everybody. So, yesterday, WWDC's keynote, I feel bereft.
You feel bereft?
I feel bereft. Because there is no new MacBooks.
But you didn't really think there was going to be any.
I did until Friday when Mark Gurman published the story, the rumor that there wouldn't be. And then I thought, well, this is suspicious. If Mark's saying this on the Friday before the Monday keynote, it's almost as if Apple wanted everyone to know, don't worry, calm down, don't be disappointed. So, in a way, I'm glad they said that, right?
You know how you're always looking in the mirror and telling yourself, Leo, I'm enough? You should do
I'm
that
good
about
enough.
Your
I'm
MacBook.
Strong enough.
Yeah, your MacBook
and gosh darn
is
it,
enough.
People like me.
Yes.
My MacBook is from 2015.
It's enough. Mine also is from 2015.
It's the last good MacBook.
Mm-hmm. And do you really need a new one? Besides, save that for the MacBreak Weekly. This is the iOS show, even though...
Well, there's no new iPads either, although my iPad is good enough.
Yes. But there were a lot of new announcements that were inspiring. The more I thought about it, the more I got
really?
Inspired about...
Aren't you sweet?
Well, I'm sweet or I'm a sheep.
Aren't
who knows?
Aren't you kind?
I have really come to think over the last few years that we use our iPhones too much. And
oh, so you like this new stuff.
I
and by
do,
the way, Google's doing it too.
Mm-hmm.
That say, hold on, buddy. Maybe you shouldn't be using that in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm. I believe that the technology can be a behavioral addiction. It's different than an actual like physical addiction.
No, I agree. Yeah,
but it really is, and I think
it isn't so different because I think you get the dopamine surge, you know, brain chemistry surge, and in a way, that's heroin. I mean, I think it's not physically addictive, but there is a little bit of a withdrawal. If you took my phone away, I'd punch you.
Well, it's like really?
Yeah. Go ahead, try it. Go on.
I just wanted to see what happened.
Seriously.
What is that? Is that a phone that I just took?
Yeah.
Okay.
I hear people, it's the biggest phone ever made. I hear people say, who was it was saying that his child had booked a week-long trip away from technology. There was no internet. And he was grateful for that. If my, you know, like his adult son booked this and the whole family went. And if my kid did that, I'd punch him. I don't want to be away from technology. Lack of internet for a week, I'd be shaking. So I think it is almost a physical addiction.
Yeah.
It is that strong, I guess.
I think it is. And so I think, first of all, we talked about this yesterday. Everybody doesn't need these new digital health type features that are going to come in iOS 12. And I feel like I need them. And I need something else to help me help myself. Like, I know that I'm in control. Like, I know that I can stop anytime. But I set timers for myself on my Apple Watch. Like, okay, I'm going to look at Facebook for 20 minutes. Or I'm going to look at Instagram for 20 minutes. And I get the timer. I get the physical thing. Okay, Megan, stop. So sometimes I don't stop. So I do think it would be nice to have the app not working. I like that. I like the parental controls that they announced. I like that I can control them from my iPhone. And then there are other things that have nothing to do with that, like iOS 12 features.
We'll get there. Hold on. Hold your horses. We've got to do this in an orderly fashion.
We do?
You jumped right in the middle, and okay, I'm going to go with you on that one. But let's try to do this a little bit more orderly. So let's start with the screen time stuff.
Okay, screen time.
And this is Be More Aware. This is Apple's preview, which is nice, of iOS 12. And this is on their website if you want to see it yourself. And screen time is, I think, really cool, which is going to give you a graph of how you're using your phone. How much screen time literally has been used. And this, you can see, it shows you all in different colors a bar graph of what you used. Oddly enough, it seems to focus on Facebook. I think Apple, if there was a subtext to this whole event, it was, we're better than Facebook.
Yeah, it was nana nana boo boo.
We don't like Facebook.
Yeah.
So longest session after bedtime use, isn't that an interesting stat? Mm-hmm. Here's the things that you can set limits on. So you can say, I don't want to use Instagram, another Facebook product, more than a couple of hours, right? Mm-hmm. It's really interesting that it's Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, Google's product. But it's also acknowledgement that those are the ones we spend a lot of time on maybe and don't want to.
And if you, I mean, you already have this feature. So iOS 12 only available to developers with a developer account at this point. I mean,
it's coming out in September with the new iPhone.
So, but you do have these features to some extent. You have one of these features. If you take a look at my screen, you can see under battery usage, which is a weird place for this. But like in the last 24 hours, for example, this iPad has used YouTube for 3.9 hours.
Yeah, that's under the battery life. And you can choose if you want to do it last 24 hours, week?
Last 7 days, this is 23.6 hours in the last 7 days
aimed
on YouTube.
At battery usage, but it is roughly the same thing. And they've added the ability to say, I don't want to watch more than a certain amount of YouTube in a given day, that kind of thing. And you can bypass it. You can, A, you can not use it. And B, if they even showed, if you get that warning, oh, you've overdone it, there is a... I don't care. Mm-hmm. This is my life and I'm going to live it. You can also I think this is actually a subtle but very useful one. And Android's doing this in the next version of Android as well. Take notifications off the screen during bedtime or do not disturb hours. Because one of the things that happens during do not disturb times is these notifications are luring you back in. Come on, Megan. Mm-hmm. Don't you want to know? So you're going to be able to keep a little more control. You're going to say, for one thing, they're putting the notification settings right in the front there, which, in the past you've had to dig into notifications in the settings. They're going to stack them finally, which is something Android started doing in the last version of Android. And that's a nice thing where all the messages apps, see how it's a little stack and you can look at those individually. See, I'm tapping it as if it's going to do something, but it's not. Do not disturb is really nice. They've had that forever, but now... You can do things like until this evening for an hour until I leave. So you could say, here it says Heritage Middle School. You could say, I'm at work. Don't disturb me until I leave work. That thing would be great. Mm-hmm. I think that'd be really nice. And of course, they continue with the existing Do Not Disturb, which is based on time. Look at this. Until the end of this event, if your calendar has an event that you're at, a PTA meeting, you could say, or iOS today, don't disturb me until the end of this event. I think those are nice features. But that's the new Do Not Disturb stuff. But let's go right to the tippity top and walk through this because that way we won't miss anything.
Okay.
The first thing they mentioned is big speed improvements. Mm-hmm. We'd heard that Craig Federighi had brought his team together about almost a year ago, and said, guys, we're not going to add a lot of features to iOS 12. We're going to focus on improving it, making it better, making it more reliable and faster. And they're claiming big improvements.
40% faster app launch.
70% faster swipe to camera. 50% faster keyboard display. And double app launch under heavy workload. So if they live up to these numbers, that'll be noticeable. It'll feel much snappier.
I guess. Yeah, I never noticed those changes.
There's an old saying in the old days when we did computer benchmarks. The old rule of thumb was anything less than a 5% improvement, you're not going to notice. But if a computer's 5% faster, you'll slightly notice that. When you're talking double the speed or a 50% increase, you really will notice that, I think, if this is genuine. Now, I have to point out that this is marketing, and sometimes marketing terms are fudged a little bit. So we'll just have to wait and see. The other good news is this is going to work on any iOS device that iOS 11 is on, which means everything all the way back to the 5S, I think, right? So that's really good news. That means a lot of people with older phones, iPhone 6s, for instance, will get the update. And I hope the speed improvements.
Well, Scooter X in the chat room is saying that he saw on Twitter that someone installed the beta on their 6S, and they were noticing the speed improvements.
And that's actually a big deal, because normally when you do an early beta like this, they just made the beta available to developers. When you do, they still debugging code in there. Mm-hmm. They haven't optimized it. Typically, betas, speed does not get optimized till the very end because they want to keep a lot of the telemetry in there. So if there's bugs and problems, they can quickly identify mm-hmm. and fix them. So if you're seeing a speed up now in a beta, it's not that early. I mean, 12's been betaed for a while. But if you're seeing it now 3 or 4 months ahead of time, that's good. That's a good sign. I think that means it might even be more faster. I wasn't excited about FaceTiming 32 people at once.
I'm not excited about FaceTiming one person at once.
I use it with Mom. Mom likes FaceTime. But that's the only one I know. So it's going to be hard. This is just catch up to Google Hangouts, which has been able to do 8 people for the mm-hmm. longest time. But I do like the aesthetics. Apple's aesthetics are good. You've got these little floating postage stamps of the participants. If you have more than 4 or 5 on the screen, you'll have a little bar at the bottom. And when somebody talks, in a very nice animation, their little postage stamp gets bigger and smaller. So that's where Apple's good. It's aesthetic. But, okay, fine. You want to look at the video? Here's the video.
My kids use House Party, partly because...
Which does this.
Yeah, because they do have a lot of friends that they like to talk to at once.
I think that's who this is aimed at.
Yeah, absolutely. But my boys use it mostly because they can't FaceTime their best friend who uses an Android phone.
And that's... See, the big problem with all of the features Apple adds to iOS is Apple does not spread, like, messages, mm-hmm. FaceTime. They don't spread it around. They don't spread the wealth. Mm-hmm. And so you're right. I think most people are going to choose cross-platform solutions like House Party or Google Hangouts. So, you know, because Google does make it cross-platform. So people will be able to, you know, share with them. Now, you left out, right after they talked about how they're going to help you use the phone less, make it less addictive, they introduced Memojis.
Yeah, I left that on purpose. I think we've reached a point at which...
Peak emoji?
I can't... The narcissism involved in the Memoji, I say that and I'll probably use it, but I don't know. And I use Bitmoji, so...
Yeah, so it's like an Animoji. You know, they've added a couple more. They're going to have, a dinosaur and a ghost and one more. I can't remember, but... there is also the capability of making an Animoji that kind of looks like you. They call it the Memoji. cringe. And it is like Bitmoji. Snapchat bought Bitmoji. And so if you use Snapchat, you can create an emoji like yourself. Samsung on the S9 introduced one that's even weirder because it takes a picture of you and then tries to generate a cartoon emoji animated just like Apple's. That looks like you, but it's kind of, I should have brought my S9 so I could show you. It's the uncanny valley. It's ugly. It's creepy. And I think Apple was right to, instead of using a picture of you, just let you do it and make it's much more cartoony, but it tracks your face. Mm-hmm. So as you move and smile and talk, it does all of the same, even stick out your tongue. They've added that.
Right. Tongue detection.
Tongue detection is here. Thank God.
So one thing I found interesting about this is we got a question on Twitter. Will this be available to other phones besides the iPhone X? And you won't be able to make them on any other phone.
No, but you'll get them.
Yeah, you'll get them, but you won't be able to make them.
No, of course not.
Because they don't have the cameras yet. But what I
found... Oh, you mean on other iPhones? Yeah. No, it's for iPhone 10.
Yeah, your iPhone 8 won't be able to make them emoji.
But you can send it to somebody on another phone because they make it a movie.
Right.
That plays on even on Android phones, which is very generous of them.
But one thing I found worthy of note was that when they introduced the Animoji, it was a big only on iPhone 10. But they didn't do that. So they didn't try to sell iPhone 10s with the Memoji, which I thought was worth noting. Because, I mean, they're going to come out with a new phone, so they're maybe not, you know, pushing. The iPhone 10 is not the new anymore. But I thought that was interesting that they didn't make a big deal about that. Because that also frustrated people. They were like, oh, okay, that's a cool, like, everyone made fun of the iPhone 10 and it's like, oh, yeah, you're paying $1,000 for a phone so you can have an Animoji.
Remember that this is designed for the next iPhone, the September iPhone, and maybe the September iPads. And I'm sure that all the new iPhones will support it. So Apple's not saying iPhone 10 because it's really iPhone 11 or whatever the next iPhone is. And that's what this is going to be for. Yeah, you'll have backwards compatibility with your old 5S and 6, but would you, you know, really, Apple can't be expected to put that on there. You need that special camera. Here's the new Animojis, by the way. Kitty cat, panda, dinosaur, and ghost.
Okay, let's start over. That is a tiger and a koala. I'll give you kitty cat for tiger, but not a panda for koala.
That is a ghost, though, right?
I don't know. Yeah. I just...
That's
obviously
a ghost.
A koala.
There's a little morbidity in here.
There's the panda.
Okay, quite obvious. Hey, have you ever held a koala?
No.
I have.
Okay.
You know, they smell like eucalyptus.
Oh.
Strongly. Almost unpleasantly so.
Huh.
Just little koala
tip.
The
things you learn. I know so, you tuned in to see what a koala
so,
smelled like.
I'm just saying, you're right. That's a koala. But you sure that's not a kitty cat?
I don't know.
Could be a kitty cat. It's a friendly tiger.
Yes.
And this is the existing crop. And now they're going to add four new. And here's the tongue, if you want to see the tongue in action. How exciting. Tongue detection. Gene Simmons will be thrilled. Mm-hmm. I can assure you. He's finally getting what he's been looking for. And of course, this is more stuff Snapchat's had for years. Camera effects, filters, and you know, and you can do these in FaceTime too. Actually, one of the I thought this was kind of a cool use of the Memoji. You can use that in a FaceTime conversation on your body. So they were demonstrating. I saw Marcus Brownlee posted a Memoji of his face. So they were demonstrating it for journalists at WWDC, and it's kind of cool. So it would be that head on your body, so it makes it look a little more realistic, and you can talk and have a message. So,
could I do the whole show in Memoji?
You could. Yeah. We could. We now have the capability.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Actually, we literally could. You'd have to set up. I know how we do it. We set up your iPhone 10. You'd get your Memoji on, and then we'd AirPlay it over to the TriCaster. Kevin, you'd have to garbage mask out the UI so we just get the Memoji stuff and then put it on a green screen here in the studio.
And then I wouldn't have to wear any makeup.
Not only would you not have to wear any makeup, you could do it from your home.
Oh, great.
It's the future.
Let's do it.
Did you see the videos and pictures? Did you see Renee Ritchie's video of, I should pull this up, of him playing this new AR slingshot game?
No.
Let me get the Instagram up and I can show you this. He says, "I Justine totally kicks my you whoop 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 at multiplayer play." Here we go. Isn't this exciting? So this is how much fun it's going to be watching people play this game. They're looking to them. This table's filled with blocks and slingshots and fun and games. To us, it just looked like idiots.
Yeah. Until we all live in a virtual world, it's going to be that way for a while. But this, I do like that.
This looks fun, actually.
You're not alone. You know, yeah. You're playing with one other person.
So that's one of the things they added is that you can have not just one other person. Notice there's a third here, spectator.
Right.
So all of the iOS devices in proximity can share the augmented reality experience. So that's what makes this possible. You can share a single playing field and play on it. In this case, they're doing the slingshot. Without video of the slingshot, it really isn't particularly compelling. But
yeah, I think multiplayer AR, I like that. You know, I can't remember this author, but she writes about internet. And she kind of, about kids and internet. And really, her thesis is that we can't be blaming the phone for, you know, the rise in anxiety and depression and all that stuff. No. But she takes the Michael Pollan rule, which is use screens, not too many,
mostly use screens, mostly vegetables, not too much.
No, use screens. Not for too long, mostly together.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah.
So in this equation, together equals vegetables.
Yes. Yes. So this is Michael Pollan.
And I have the same reaction
much,
to Brussels sprouts and together.
I know. Yeah.
No,
you're a lost cause.
No.
But
know.
Using them together, especially with younger kids, you know, watching things together.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that that's, who is that that said that? Because I think she's right. I agree with, agree with her.
Okay.
Here's another example of AR kit being used. These two are destroying their house together. But of course they aren't really. But this is potentially interesting. The only thing, I mean, aren't your arms going to get tired? Or not? Mm. Maybe not. It just, I don't know if I want to hold my, I don't know. I think this could, I will reserve judgments on this until we get it and we can try it. This could be very cool. I remember that a lot of the AR things they showed last year when they introduced AR kit, we're not really doing it. Although, thank God, Apple finally released a measuring app for iOS.
Yes. Okay, so I got the author is Anya Kamenetz, and her book is The Art of Screen Time, How Your Family Can Balance Digital
Love
Media
it.
And Real
Love it. You
Life.
Should get her on Triangulation.
Yeah, maybe this Friday.
Yeah.
Well, Anya, if you're listening right now,
we'll get you on.
Listening together with your family, watching iOS Today.
So here's some of the, this is Apple talking about some of the things they imagine. This is already in place. The first thing they showed was at the Apple Park campus. You can use an iPad to look at the campus on a table, especially a modified table. Here they say you can look at how furniture will look before you bring it home. That's IKEA, of course. This is maybe in the long run the most powerful use of this, which is in business. You can be shown how something is going to look, but you can also be shown how to repair something. Fly to your gate, an AR prototype. Now, what's interesting, this is a prototype, but Google has announced this for Google Maps, and it's going to come out in the next, few months, might even be coming out any day now. The idea is when you launch Google Maps in walk mode, it was not much use in driving mode. But one of the problems, and I'm sure anybody who's used maps while they're walking has experienced as I have, you get out the door of the store and you want to know where to go, and you don't know which way to go. It's not, you can't really tell. So the AR is going to make a huge difference because in the embedded in the map, it will show you the path you should follow. Now, this is a prototype from American Airlines. Google has actually built it into their maps. So I think Android, well, actually, it's not just Android. Well, we'll see. I'm sure if they put it in Maps, it'll be on iOS too. Why not, right? So this is coming, and sooner than Apple seems to want. AR plus play, fun that goes beyond the screen. We've seen kind of this. Remember Mattel had they bought the 3D, what was that called? ViewMaster. And they had this ViewMaster that you get dinosaurs on the table and stuff. I don't see a lot of people using that. By the way, Google is also going to have this take a walk with a Tyrannosaurus. They showed at Google I.O. a fox leading you around through the city streets. So this is a little more practical than just, you could already put a dinosaur in there.
But you're still looking down at a screen.
Pokemon Go, that's been around for how long? Almost 2 years. So this is Apple's demonstration of how cool AR is going to be. I think the jury's still out.
Yeah.
I'm excited, potentially. So we talked about screen time. Let's skip through that. Oh, they're improving photos.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they didn't say that. I guess this is going to come in iOS 12. I don't know why they don't do it now because it's an app. But intelligent sharing suggestions. So if you share some photos with Kira, and Kira then will have a little pop-up on her screen that says, hey, you have some photos you might want to share back.
Right.
From the same place. I think that's cool.
Yeah, Google Photos does that.
Do they do it exactly that way? I don't think so.
Well, so here is, if you take a look at my screen, here's Create a Shared Album, and it has several of these people that are in those soccer pictures.
I use that, but some of them are wrong. So
yeah, there, many of them are wrong.
Yeah, it does always take, and a lot of the picture choices are not good. So there's a lot of manual fidgeting that it takes. But when we traveled, Lisa and I and Michael in Japan, I used that a lot. Every day at the end of the day, they would say, hey, you might want to share these pictures with Lisa or Michael. And I did. So this will be nice. They're also going to add better ways to search. So you'll see suggestions for recent events, people and places. This is kind of catch up, isn't it, to Google Photos? Now, one of the things Apple says, we're better than Google Photos because we do this stuff on device.
Right.
Except I detected a slight fudge in the keynote this time. It implied that some of it or much of it was done on a device. But my understanding of what you can do on a device with limited battery storage, pretty good processor speed, but still relatively limited, is nothing compared to what you could do server-side. Google does it all on the servers, on the Google servers. And people who are concerned about privacy say, well, I don't want Google to have my photos. I should point out that even, I mean, I guess this works if you don't put stuff on iCloud, but doesn't everybody just use iCloud for their photos? Maybe I'm wrong on that one. I guess if you're really privacy concerned, you could turn off the server. I suspect, it'd be my suspicion, that some of these functions would not work.
Right.
Then Apple didn't say all of it happens on the phone. They didn't say nothing's done on the server. They kind of hedged it a little bit this time. And so that's my kind of canary in the coal mine. I do like, remember they bought Workflow, which we liked. We picked as an app caps for some time. They finally seem to have taken it and used it and built it in. And it's going to work with Siri now.
I'm excited about that. I'm going to just see what kind of fun, crazy things I can do. Like, this is sort of, you know, just something I can do to impress people when they come over to my house. I'll just talk to my HomePod, and the HomePod will turn off and on the lights and turn on the music that I want to listen to. And, you know, I can't really see it being more efficient.
Here's what they said. Siri will actually learn what you do. Now, see, to me, this is the creepy line that Google crossed. So if you typically pick up a coffee on the way to work, Siri will learn your routine and suggest when you place your order, when to place your order from the lock screen. So it'll say, oh, at this time of day, you usually get a disgusting mint mojito at Starbucks. Mm-hmm. And so they show as you're actually Phil's, pardon me. So as you're, because it's 9:41 a.m. Oh, and days past at 9:41 a.m., you've ordered this. I don't know how they know that. You've ordered this from Phil's. Maybe she uses the Phil's app. This is exactly the thing people said when Google does it. That's creepy.
Well, there's the creepy, useful teeter-totter, right?
And I lean on the useful side.
Yeah. So, like, my teeter-totter works like this. Whenever Google presented me with something like that, I'd be like, ooh, creepy, but super useful. Thanks, Google. So, like, that's what I think.
They're also going to add shortcuts for routines that you do. Call mom, send last photo, find coffee shops. That's the workflow stuff. Mm-hmm. And it is, it even looks like If This Then That, doesn't it?
Yeah. You mentioned that. Well, yeah, If This Then That has always been a little bit easier than workflow to use, in my opinion, for me.
If you combine the two. And one of the reasons I'm kind of interested in this is because Workflow was always hobbled by the fact that it was a third-party app on iOS. Mm-hmm. And third-party apps don't have nearly the access to things, low-level things the operating system does. So Apple does, obviously. Mm-hmm. So in theory, they could make this much more useful.
Right. Well, I would like, the first thing I'm going to try to do is, because I have a smart lock, so when I leave the house, lock the door.
Yeah.
Because I don't
and if you don't lock the door, your phone, when you get to work, say you forgot to lock the door.
Yeah.
You usually lock the door at this time. Did you mean to lock the door?
Yeah. And then notify everyone else that I haven't locked the door.
Yeah. Now, Apple, and we were talking about this a little bit, that you know, there were some nudges to the other guys. They really doubled down on privacy. And I have to say, I really welcome this. For instance, Safari is now going to have the most capable features for blocking tracking of any browser out there. This is what Apple says. Apple believes privacy is a fundamental human right, which is why iOS has always been designed with built-in encryption, on-device intelligence, and other tools that let you share what you want on your terms. Safari now prevents share buttons and comment widgets on the web from tracking you without your permission. That is a direct aim at the like button. Mm-hmm. And, of course, what Facebook's been accused of doing, and Mark Zuckerberg disingenuously denied knowing about when he testified in Congress, is something called shadow profiles. Even if you're not a member of Facebook, because those like buttons are in all the sites, they can track you as you move around. Oh, saw the like button on that site, saw the like button on that site. So this will block it. And a browser could do that because that's all done in JavaScript. A browser could anonymize you that way. So that's very interesting.
Yeah, I suspected something like this was coming when Tim Cook did that interview with Kara Swisher, and he made a big point of saying, you know, those ads that follow you around is something that you looked at. I found that really creepy. So now I was like, oh, yeah, because he's going to point out, because that's something that I do find creepy.
You find that creepy? That's because it doesn't either. First of all, it's anthropomorphizing to say that ads are following you around. They're not. I just want to say this. What's happening is You sent a signal to Google by buying something or, you know, looking email or looking at something. Somehow a signal's been sent to Google that you're interested in something. The sites that use Google advertising all are going to have the same ads. Google's going to put ads up that you're in for stuff you're interested in, which, in my opinion, is a very good use.
I don't like it.
You don't want to look at. There's two reasons why it's a good thing. Advertisers like it because they don't want to waste money on advertising something you don't want to buy. You should like it because why do you want ads on the page for barbed wire, something you're not going to buy?
How do you know I buy barbed wire?
I don't think you're a barbed wire buyer. I'm just saying. Maybe you are a barbed wire buyer.
I get it. I get what you're saying.
So wouldn't you prefer, if there's going to have to be ads, and there's going to be ads, if the choice is random, totally random ads for things you're not interested in, or ads for things you've been shopping for, you're interested in, that you like, it's a benefit to advertisers for sure. And is it not a benefit to you? It's not following you around. I got to say this. It's because the Google Ad Network ad placements are on multiple pages. It's Google. It's they're not following. See, when Tim says this, he's smart enough to know that is really misrepresenting what's going on. It bugs the hell out of me. Because it's in Apple's interest to because they wanted to do it with their iAds network, but it failed.
Yeah. Yeah, these ads are following me around. They're whispering in my ear.
Yeah, no, they're
buy
not.
This thing no. you cannot afford.
No, they're not. It's just that it's like, it's as if, if you read the same magazine over and over again, you'd see the same ads, right? You're seeing ads from the same source. They're not following you. They all right, anyway. Safari also prevents, and this is actually a really big deal. Steve Gibson will love this. Advertisers from collecting your device's unique characteristics. So this is something called super cookies. You know that when you log into Facebook, Facebook puts a cookie on your site that's an authenticator that says this is you, mm-hmm. you logged in. And that authenticator can be used as you move around with a like button. But you can always delete that cookie. That's a cookie. Mm-hmm. And we now are very aware of this because of the EU and all these cookie announcements we're getting everywhere. I don't think cookies are a problem, but this is the tracking. Google, when you send them a signal you are interested in something, they know that. When you go to sites that have Google advertising, the Google cookie is on there. That's how they match it. They say, oh, it's Megan. These are the ads we want to show Megan. Safari is going to prevent first of all, that you can correct yourself by deleting the cookie. But there's something called a super cookie that is not deletable. And it is basically identifying you by your behaviors, your characteristics. And it turns out Google's done a lot of research. I think other companies probably as well. But Google's been transparent about it on things like your gait when you walk around with your phone that identify you as you. Mm. And those things are unique to you. If a collection of information that the browser knows about your device, on the desktop, the size of the screen, the resolution of the screen, what hardware is, and so there's a lot of things a browser can query about your device. If you put those 10 or 15 different points together, it usually is a unique constellation that identifies you uniquely, completely independently of cookies. So Safari is going to block that kind of information. Again, this is something a browser can do. It doesn't have to send that information out to a site that requests it. So I think that that's good. They can't identify your device or retarget ads to you across the web. By the way, that's probably a better way to say it than following you around.
Whispering in your ear.
Whispering in your
buy
ear.
Buy this. So we should say that all of these privacy things, as well as the screen time things, are Apple's taking advantage of the position they're in, which is they don't sell your time. They don't care how long. They want you to buy an iPhone, buy an iPad, buy an Apple Watch, buy a computer. They don't care how much time you spend with it.
Not completely clear that that's the case. I'm a cynic. Companies maximize profit. That's their one and only job, right? We know Apple collects a lot of data about you. They do. They know a lot about you. In fact, Facebook admitted that they had sold Apple and Google mm-hmm. and other companies information about you, the exact same kind of information Cambridge Analytica wanted. Apple was getting on the phone. Device manufacturers were getting that information, and they were actively pursuing it. So as I know people love Apple. I love Apple. You love their products. They don't love you. They're just a company maximizing profits. They're not your girlfriend. They're not your boyfriend. They don't – they're not – so they may say that because it's good business, But I want you to really understand that Apple does collect information like this, and there's nothing to say it's not using it. They don't. They are not completely clear on this. And I'll give you a good example. It's in the news today. Paul Manafort, who was President Trump's former campaign manager, is in trouble again because he was indicted. He's been trying to get witnesses to change their stories or to agree on a story. How do the feds know this? Well, we know because we've seen the warrant. Because Manafort was, like you probably, using encrypted messaging to do this, right? If you wanted to tell a witness, hey, let's get our stories straight, you'd use WhatsApp or Signal, he was, to message them, encrypted.
But iMessage is also encrypted, right?
Encrypted. So how could the feds possibly know this? Well, we saw the warrant. They have his iCloud data. Everything you do is stored in iCloud. In the clear, the feds sent a warrant to Apple. Now, admittedly, they had to get a warrant, but they sent a warrant to Apple, and his iCloud data had all of these encrypted messages, had everything, and that's how the feds knew this. Mm-hmm. So just to be very, very clear, it's in Apple's commercial interest to really promote this, and they are. Look at this pop-up they're going to put on your screen. Do you want to allow them to use cookie and website data while browsing? This will allow them to track your activity. But what they don't say is, but we also know all of this stuff. They don't. And so it's not immediately clear that Apple is looking out for your best interest. It's clear that from their commercial point of view, it is good for them. Well, I know I'm always beating this drum.
But I'm saying it's not their business model. I mean, I'm saying that they're
bull crap.
It
is their business
model.
But
they're selling us products. They're selling us a lot more physical products than Google is.
Look, they tried to create iAds exactly for this purpose. They wanted to put ads in apps. It flopped. Nobody wanted it because they had Facebook and Google. So they shut it down. If they can make money on it, they're perfectly happy to do it. And my suspicion is there are reasons that there are ways for them to monetize it. And the very fact that they were getting that information from Facebook on iPhone users tells me they're still interested. Why are they interested? So, yes, they make money when you buy hardware. But remember that they make more money in services than they do in iOS and Macintosh combined. Almost $10 billion last quarter from services. What is services? Apple doesn't break it down. We're pretty sure most of it comes from the App Store.
Mm-hmm. Apple Music,
iCloud. But they don't break it down. They don't say exactly how they're making money. I'm not convinced. Read the privacy policies, but understand that every company has a fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders to maximize profit. Apple is no longer just a hardware company. It's not accurate to say they make all their money from selling phones.
But I mean, the screen time and the parental controls, that was also part of their fiduciary responsibility because they got letters from investors saying.
So JANA Investment and the California Teachers Retirement Fund both complained in January at the shareholders meeting saying your stuff is too addictive. You got to do something. But even if they hadn't, notice Google's doing it too.
Right.
Everybody's very aware of this. And so, again, it's like anthropomorphizing. It's like saying that ads are following you around. Don't anthropomorphize companies. Companies act all corporations act to maximize profits. That's their sole and only goal. Now, sometimes maximizing profits means keeping customers happy. Sometimes it means getting marketing messages the customers like. Sometimes it means selling customer information. There's a variety of ways to maximize profit. I would never assume that any company, including Apple, is looking out for your best interest. They're not. They're looking out for their best interest, period.
But there are also people in these companies.
Yes.
And there are people behind these things. There are people recognizing how often we're picking up our iPhone and not saying, you know what, like we'd make a lot more money if we came up with this screen time thing. I understand what you're saying, and I understand that companies have the bottom line is the most important thing, but there are also people inside these companies that are helping make these decisions. Mm-hmm. Let's agree to disagree.
No, I don't disagree with you. And I think Apple's pretty benign. And I think Tim Cook, if it were up to him, is completely benign.
Yeah.
But it's not up to him.
Right.
And I think that in general, it would be a mistake for anybody to assume that any company, even the wonderful Godhead of Apple, is doing anything but maximizing their profits. Because that's it would be actually a failure of their responsibility to shareholders, to their stakeholders, not to maximize profits. That's what they're there to do. And they can make the case, and I wish more companies made the case. You know what really maximizes profits? Happy customers. That's how you maximize profits. That's that and that's probably true, but usually shareholders are more short-termed than that. They want to see quarterly results. They want to see dividends. So there it is, and now they're going to have a new Apple Books. It was iBooks. It's called Apple Books. Big deal. They have all new design.
Well, they said you could find your where you were in the book. Which
that puzzled me.
Yeah.
Because I thought they were doing that.
Right.
Why would they not?
Yeah.
The redesign, we'll have to dig deeper on what that means. The redesigned stock app, nobody wanted.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the big feature of iOS 10 was that you could hide the stock app. The big feature of iOS 12 is bring it back. They're going to have voice memos on iPad. Actually, they're bringing a lot of this stuff that wasn't on iPad to iPad.
But still no calculator. Yeah.
No. Best journalism in one place. That's Apple News. They're spending a lot of money on that, including buying Texture and hiring Nathan Oliveris Giles. Security code autofill. That's actually a feature that you see on other phones and sometimes even on the iPhone. When you sign up for WhatsApp, you give it their phone number, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it automatically detects the text message and fills it in. I guess that's going to be more capable.
That's nice. Yeah. It'll also remind you not to use the same password. It'll warn you about reusing passwords.
Yeah. That's a great thing.
Because
people, as much as we push LastPass and password managers, most people are never going to have anything like that. If the device doesn't do it, they're not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that is good. I think iOS 12 on balance is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're not even done because we have Watch OS and TV OS.
We aren't. And we're not even done with iOS 12 because one important thing is it's going to work on all of the phones that iOS 11 worked on.
Did I not say that?
You did not say that.
I did
not
say that. I said that right at the beginning.
Okay.
Pay attention.
You said it.
Yes, it will. All the way back to the 5S. Remember me saying that?
Yesterday.
Anything that iOS... No, today I said it. Anything iOS 11 works on, it'll work on. How about a quick look at WatchOS, because there's one thing I'm very excited about.
Okay.
Walkie-talkie. Are you excited about walkie-talkie?
Yes. I can't imagine a use case except for an emergency. So, but yes, in an emergency, if you're drowning somewhere and you... Make sure I'm the first person that you walkie-talkie because I have an Apple Watch.
So that's the problem, I imagine, with walkie-talkie, which is like kind of the Nextel phone where you press a button and it goes, and actually it was more like, bah-da-da-da. Megan, I'm on my way. Mm-hmm. And then you press your button and go, bah-da-da-da. Okay, Leo. Bah-da-da-da. It was so annoying. Remember when those Nextel phones, they were so annoying. Anyway, but there are people who love them, especially with their spouse. Here's the problem. Your spouse doesn't wear an Apple Watch.
Mm-hmm.
My spouse doesn't wear an Apple Watch.
Right. So it's
so
only...
I'm going to bug you.
Yeah, exactly.
Ba-da-da! What's going on? It's going to be great. I can't wait. What else? There's some new competitions. This is the one I know you're going to bug me with.
Mm-hmm.
You can turn a friendly rivalry into a bitter hatred.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I thought they said feud. It's fuel. Should be feud. Where you're fighting over who's bicycled the most miles or whatever. I think that's good, actually. The competition in Apple Watch has always been a great thing.
It will recognize when you start a workout, so if you forget.
Hallelujah. Finally. And it will retroactively accredit your account with the number of steps or paces.
It's like when a tree falls in a forest. Does anyone hear it? If you don't start a workout app, did you really exercise?
I know. Lisa's always saying that to me. I said, oh, crud, I forgot to start my watch. She said, you did it. You did the exercise. What do you care if your watch knows?
Mm-hmm.
I care.
New bands, new Pride band. New.
That's actually available now, I think.
Marine green and peach faces.
Marine green?
Yeah, marine green.
And peach. Can't wait. Mm-hmm. Siri, the Siri face, which I actually really like, is going to get smarter. I've done something to my screen. I don't help me. I hate it when this happens.
You did the slide over.
I can't. Anyway, now I have. Now we can. You know, we save time because we can whiz through twice as many.
Okay, are we done with the
features.
Watch?
Should we Student move on IDs. To- that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. TVOS. Not a whole lot, right? Oh. I gotta mention this.
The Atmos.
No podcasts.
Oh, podcasts.
Yes.
Although, on your Apple Watch.
You could do it with Overcast before, but Apple Podcasts will now support the watch. You'll see the podcast. It'll sync automatically. So, I was asking you this. I don't know a lot of I don't know a lot of people who pair their AirPods to their watch, but that's what this is all about. I mean, that's the only reason you would do it, right?
Mm-hmm. Our guest here, he does.
Do you?
Mm-hmm. When he runs, he pairs his...
Yeah, okay, cool.
And he claims his AirPods don't fall out even when he runs, so he must have AirPod-shaped ears.
I can see him from here. yeah. And then tvOS Atmos support, which is actually, I think it's the first streaming device to do both. They even said this, to do both Dolby Vision, which is the HDR technology, not the only one, but one of them, and Dolby Atmos. So they must have signed a big deal with Dolby to get all that doubly in the Apple TV.
Some extra features if you're a Charter Spectrum cable subscriber.
This is so frustrating because Apple has always wanted to replace that bad set-top box you get from the cable company. You know, that thing that's Scientific Atlanta that's like ancient and doesn't work well. And they've always wanted to replace that with an Apple TV. But they can't get the cable companies to go for it because the cable companies rent those boxes and they make a lot of money on it. And they want to the main thing is, the cable companies have always said, we want to control the presentation of our content. That's really all that's the only thing we've got, Apple, is that our content, you know, when you watch the cable box, they get to promote other cable company stuff. And that's their window into you. And of course, Apple wants to control that too. And if you have an Apple TV, then you'll be using the TV app and Apple will be promoting movies on Apple and iTunes. And so the cable companies are pretty much uniformly saying, the hell with that. We're not doing that. Except for unaccountably Charter Spectrum. But I don't think they're going to get anybody else. It's just Charter Spectrum. Live TV on the Apple TV, they've wanted it for so long. They've been talking to all the networks and the individual affiliates. No go, no go. One cable company, Charter Spectrum. You know Comcast will never do it. They have their own platform, the X1. So it's too bad because I think we'd like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to happen.
Well, I think we did it. Is there anything else? I mean, you'll talk about Mac OS on Mac Break Weekly.
We'll spend a lot of time on Mac OS, yeah. That's because I think of all of them, well, I think Apple, I know I wanted a new MacBook, but in a way I'm kind of glad that you're really focusing on software. Mm-hmm. And they are putting some nice new features in. I'm pretty excited about those.
Remember, you're good enough. Your MacBook is good enough.
Well, I think I decided I'm going to buy a new MacBook Air. I was waiting. The only thing wrong with this, see, it's got, well, there's two things wrong. It has a MagSafe adapter. That's not so good anymore. But it has a USB. It has a headphone jack. It has an SD card reader. USB, Thunderbolt 2. It's thin. It's light. The only thing wrong, and it's even got, and I kind of miss this, like a chiclet keyboard that actually has some travel.
Mm-hmm.
That's decent. The only thing wrong with it is it's a 900 screen. You know, what is it, 1280 by 900 screen. It's kind of a low quality screen.
I don't understand why you want this MacBook Air.
Because I want a thin and light with a good keyboard. The MacBook keyboard's unusable. I don't like the butterfly key. That's just me. So I can't use the new MacBook Pros. I don't like them. And the other thing that's going on is that we have new chips from Intel, the i9, which it's a hexa-core. Which sounds like a mythical beast, but is in fact a six processor with Optane, which is an optimized, it's based on the new 3D memory chips. They're really exciting, the cross-point chips. So you've got Optane memory, Optane SSDs, a faster bus. All in all, these are going to be super fast computers. But Apple's, no update. Mm. HP, Dell, Asus all have announced these new computers based on the i9. In fact, Intel just announced a chip today, the i9-8086. That sounds kind of cool. It's the 40th anniversary or the 30th anniversary of the 8086 chip? There it is, the 8086. It's a 5 gigahertz chip, and they're giving away 8,086 of them for free. But Apple, no, we're not doing anything. Asus is doing, I think, a very interesting... This is going to be really interesting. They just announced this today at Computex. So instead of a regular trackpad, this is glass on the Apple. That's going to be a screen.
Mm.
So it'll be just like a regular trackpad, but you could have individual controls pop up there. You could watch a movie there while you're working here. very interesting, right? Instead of a touch bar, it's like a touch bar, but your hand's already there. Doesn't have to go up here. Mm. It's already there. It's doing this.
Interesting.
So volume, like if you're watching a YouTube video here, the controls, well, you can scrub and stop and play and all that right here. I think that's interesting. A lot of innovation happening over on the Windows side.
Yeah. Well, you'll talk about that on Windows Weekly.
Coming up.
So if you get the MacBook Air, you can carry it around wherever you go, including the open
Rocket
houses.
Mortgage. Okay, I was wondering how you were going
to
get there.
You can go take it to an open house and then pop it open.
I knew you were segueing, but I didn't understand how. How is that going to work? Mm-hmm. Yes, Rocket Mortgage, our fine sponsor. Quicken Loans, number one lender in the country. Love Quicken Loans. Who doesn't love Quicken Loans? They are really smart technologists. Dan Gilbert there and the team understands computing. And they realize that the mortgage approval process kind of was looking a little antiquated. Going to a bank, putting on a fancy clothes, going to a bank, getting an application, filling, you know, page after page, going to the attic to get paperwork or pay stubs and all that stuff, calling the bank saying, do you have my statements from 5 years ago? All that stuff. That's so last year. Rocket Mortgage takes all of that and puts it online. And in fact, because they have relationships with all the financial institutions, you don't even have to answer a bunch of questions. You answer some simple questions at rocketmortgage.com/iOS today just to set up the account. Then based on what you give them and your permission, they can go out and get all the information they need, crunch the numbers based on income, assets, and credit. They'll pick out the loans for which you qualify for. You choose the term, the rate, the down payment, and you're approved. Most of the time in under 10 minutes. So you could do this at the open house. You could actually do it on your phone. It is easy. It is easy for refis, for home loans. There's no better way to do this than Rocket Mortgage. They've completely reinvented the process. RocketMortgage.com/iOS today. They're an equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states and MLSConsumerAccess.org number 3030. You can apply simply, you'll understand fully, and you'll mortgage confidently at Rocket Mortgage. I love this from Quicken Loans. And look at all those customer satisfaction awards year after year and after year. Number one in customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. RocketMortgage.com/iOS. Today.
Would you like to answer some questions?
Yeah.
All right. David D. in Kansas City writes, when setting up my iPad, I accidentally hit don't allow notifications on one of my apps.
Heaven for fend.
Is there a way to reset this permission without uninstalling and reinstalling the app?
Oh, gosh. I hope so. That would really be silly. This, though, is that issue that I have where you think notifications should be in the app.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in most, in the old day, and on Android certainly, but even on computers, that the settings for the app are in the app, right? But not on iOS.
Well, it sounded like iOS 12 might be improving on that. You might be able to change the notifications right from them.
From the notification screen, which is great.
But now you have to go to settings.
So go to settings. There's a notifications entry in settings. And it, as you can see, it has, and this is the other thing I hate about it. You know, I have hundreds of apps.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go through each one by one, and choose whether notifications are allowed. What I'd really like to do is one switch that turns them all off, and then I can selectively turn them on. And then kinds of notifications. Do you want a badge on the app
icon? Nobody wants that. That's the little red thing that causes me anxiety.
Nobody wants that. Do you want sounds? Maybe. Then how it shows up. Do you want it to show up on the lock screen? Or is that so private that you don't want anybody to see it when the phone is locked? It's nice that you can do this granularly. This is for YouTube, but this is for every app.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to have it show up in your history? No, I don't want anybody to know. I don't want anybody to know I watch YouTube. And then how do you want the banners? Do you want them to stick around until they're, you know, persistent is forever, or just kind of float away after you're done? And do you want previews? All of these things can be set application by application in the notification settings. So if you forget or scrub, and actually this is true of all those permissions. So there's permissions to use the camera and so forth. You can get the granular, the other permissions in a granular way by going to the individual apps in here and choosing, do you want it to share location? You know, what kinds of things it can do. If it has camera access, things like that, that'll all be in there.
The other thing I like to do in notifications is you can show previews, or like I say, never show previews.
Right.
That means like it just says you have a Gmail notification. It won't say like, oh, your underwear is ready, right, or something like that that I might not want anyone to know about. So you can say when unlocked or always show previews. I say never show previews. Never.
Never. Ever, ever.
All right. Our next comment is not really a question, but... Andy in Prunedale writes, on the Father's Day show, Leo showed the meter thermometer.
I did.
You mentioned the one downside is the fact that it's only Bluetooth.
Yeah.
Check out the meter website. They have pre-orders going for a meter block that uses its charging case as a Bluetooth to Wi-Fi bridge, allowing greater distance.
So you'd keep the charging case within Bluetooth range, and then it would have joined the network, mm-hmm, and you'd be able, because that's the one thing, you can only get like 30 feet away from the grill. And the notifications stop. So what you'd like to do is be able to wander around the, mm-hmm, house and stuff.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah.
Because I keep the grill out in the back. Yeah. I don't want to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, Anthony has a correction for me. You stated on the show that the iPhone 8 does not support wireless charging. That's incorrect. It does. I think when we were talking about our Father's Day gifts, I said, you know, if you have...
No, it doesn't.
The 8 has wireless charging.
It's got a metal case, doesn't it?
No, it's the glass. The 8 has wireless charging.
Okay. So the way to know is any of the phones up to and through 7 that had metal cases, mm-hmm, would not. That's why Apple never did it. But once you went to glass, so the 8 has glass.
Right.
You know, it's funny because I had an 8.
Yeah.
I forgot all about it. So that's when they start with the glass.
Yeah, they have wireless charging.
So that was, I concurred with your mistake because, mm-hmm, I thought they were still metal.
Mike.
Well, why did they do a red 8 and not a red 10?
It's a really great question.
Huh. Because I thought that was hard to do. Oh, all right.
Maybe the deal that they were going to get wasn't, I don't know. Who knows? Mike writes, your episode about reading was useful to me, but you managed to miss a very important point that blind people like me can only read ebooks with e-readers like the wonderfully accessible iOS devices. Tim Cook, when asked by one of his directors why Apple spent so much time on accessibility and what return did it bring, answered that they spent that much time on accessibility because they should.
Right on.
To get a return.
See, he does care. It's not about money. I apologize, Tom.
So I do make this mistake very often. I don't consider accessibility. I'm trying to get better at it. Yesterday, I learned that you can write descriptions on your photos on Twitter. Did you know that? So like meta text so that people use it on screen readers?
They should. All web pages allow that.
Well, it's not on
Twitter does it.
That's it's not good. It's not turned on default. You have to go into your settings.
You
and
should
then
do that.
Yeah, so write little descriptions on all your images.
It's the same thing accessibility on websites. When you have images, you should have a description, right, so that people who can't see the images can at least know what they are.
Right.
Kindle, though, does have the reading capability.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a mechanical voice that will read in most cases. That's up to the publishers, though. When Amazon, it's funny, this is an example of how money sometimes is more important than customer satisfaction. Amazon announced we're going to turn this on in the Kindle, and I'm sure it was because of blind readers, that every book on the Kindle, you can have an automated voice read it. And the publishers went crazy.
Mm-hmm.
They said, no. So Amazon had to turn on a feature that said publishers can choose. And I guess the publishers were more concerned about audiobook sales being hindered by this, which I wouldn't have worried about. The mechanical voice is nowhere near as good as a real reader.
Mm-hmm. One more question. David from Toronto writes, could you please tell me what you think is the best VPN for iOS? And so we did.
Why do I get this question a lot?
So
didn't we get this on the Screensavers, basically? We did.
But did we answer it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, it wasn't you. Maybe it was Ian.
No.
It was this Saturday.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I did give this question to Anthony to use on the Screensaver. So
that's
David's
why.
Already been answered. But. So,
I thought it was a new question.
No,
it was the same one. That's why I keep getting it.
No,
they keep giving me the same question.
We interviewed the Wirecutter did a great review of VPNs, and they currently don't recommend any iOS VPNs right now. They're still doing research, they said, but right now, Mark Smirminotis from the Wirecutter, he says,
I don't recommend software VPNs at all. I recommend hard, and this is the answer I gave on Saturday, if you want to refer back to the new Screensavers, but I use and recommend hardware VPN for a number of reasons. One of the attacks that can happen to you in an open access point has nothing to do with watching your data go back and forth. It has everything to do with attacking your physical machine there. So if Wi-Fi is turned on a machine, whether it's an iPhone, an iPad, or a desktop, a laptop, the attacker sitting in the coffee shop can use devices like the Wi-Fi Pineapple to get in to see more about your machine. And one of the common attacks is, and I don't know how they do this, but apparently they can see all of the access points that your machine will sign on to. I guess that's broadcast somehow. So, you know, the name of your home router, the name of the, you know, the work router, that kind of stuff, all of that shows up. What the attacker can do is then simulate that. He can actually use the Pineapple to say, oh, this is now Megan's home router. Your iPhone will go, oh, we're home. That's a better signal, and join it. Now he's got a man in the middle between you and wherever you're going. Now, admittedly, if you've got a VPN going, he's not going to be able to do much with that data. But I don't think you even want to allow that kind of attack. So what I recommend people do, and it's inexpensive, it's not much more expensive than subscribing to a VPN. And the one I always tell people about is at tinyhardwarefirewall.com, is get one of these little devices. You can get a little travel router that will join the Wi-Fi network and then broadcast it out to as many other devices as you want. So your iPad, your laptop, and your iPhone can all join that travel router. This is what we use when we're in a hotel traveling around the world. It's always a little risky joining a hotel network. Is I will set this up, the Tiny Hardware Firewall, connect it to the hotel network, and then have it be the access point. The advantage of that is it does the captive portal, all of that stuff. Lisa doesn't have to know what the password is for the Wi-Fi in the hotel or the name of it or anything like that. She always is joining the same thing, which is this router. It's automatic because she's done it before, and that's where she gets her internet from. Mm. So that, even without using a VPN or Tor, gives you a lot of protection. It provides a barrier, a firewall between you and the outside world. And then the Tiny Hardware Firewall Company has a switch that you can turn on both VPN if you want, ad blocking if you want, and Tor if you want. So it has a lot of capability. It's a good VPN. It's from Wi-Fi Consulting, Hotspot VPN. It's very good. They also offer something called Black Cloud Hole, which is a really new and I think a great idea in VPNs, where each user has their own server. And that means it's faster. In fact, the Black Cloud Hole is very good, very fast. One of the downsides of a VPN, it slows you down. And it's still going to slow you down, but not as much. So go to tinyhardwarefirewall.com. At least look at those. They're $30 or $40, depending on what kind of router you get. They're simple and complex. And then you'll pay $91 a year. That's the one I recommend. That's the full-size travel router that you'd carry with you. It gives you, you connect via Ethernet to your laptop. How much is that, Kevin? I can't read that fine print down there.
Well,
okay, so you buy that, you keep that, and then you buy Wi-Fi service from them. Unfortunately, they don't allow you to use other VPNs, but I consider their VPN very good. They do no logging. They've been in this business since the 90s. They're very reliable, and they're just down the street from the CIA, which I think
excellent
is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
No, they're very, very reliable. That's Wi-Fi Consulting, and it's tinyhardwarefirewall.com. The nice thing about that is you're not putting a software on your phone at all. You're joining a safe network on your phone.
Are you ready to put on some hats?
Is it hat time?
It's hat time, also known as app cap time.
I don't know where this came from. I like it.
I don't know where this one came from either, and I just hope it's sanitary.
What does yours say?
What does it say?
It says cat girl.
Then I guess I do know who it came from.
You know who cat girl is?
Sarah.
Is it Sarah's old hat?
I'm sure it is. No one else ever worked here who liked cats.
You know what this is? This is Ukraine. I show you here. There it is, Ukraine. You know how I know? Because it says Ukraine. So this Ukrainian, I'm Ukrainian baseball team.
Right.
Yeah. They're called the Ukrainian Funyuns.
That makes sense. You were defending Paul Manafort's digital privacy earlier.
Yeah, that's right. He's a good friend of country. We love Paul Manafort. He's a hero.
We are wearing caps, not because we're going to talk about politics, because we would never do that. We're wearing caps because... It's
Why?
App.
Oh!
It's time to talk about our favorite apps of the week, our apps that we are giving our precious time to. Shall I start?
Please.
Okay. My app is from MacPaw. Do you ever use MacPaw software?
I am.
That sounds familiar, but I don't.
They make a lot of Mac software, obviously, MacPaw. I use Gemini to clean up my photos on my computer and to clean up duplicate files and such.
Oh.
And now they have it. They just came out with an iOS version.
You've mentioned MacPaw before.
I have.
Because of Gemini, yeah.
So this is Gemini for iOS. It'll work. It's designed for the iPhone, but it'll also work on your iPad. So here it has searched all my photos, and it finds all these similar photos. And so yesterday I took some pictures of this dress, and it will show me my best results. And I can delete all these two because I don't need all those three. So I just delete. And it says, are you sure you want to delete? Yes, delete. And look at all these pictures I took of the soccer field.
Holy moly. Do I need all of them?
No, I just want the best result. But, like, maybe I do want to keep all of them, so I just deselect and I move on because I want three of the soccer field. All these pictures, you know, that's, I don't know that I'll deselect these because I want to find, I can't look at all these expressions on my daughter's soccer team and see which is the best. But, yeah, these are similar. I probably don't need all those. I just delete and delete. And then if I press this, I can add it to the ignore list. So let's say, like, I want all those photos. I want to add them to the ignore list. And then I go through, yeah, I don't need all those. I take like five pictures for every one that I need to take. And I have a ton of space on my iPhone and my iPad. But what I don't like is having to scroll through all those pictures. So it's nice to, even if you have a ton of space, it's nice to use this app. It's called Gemini. And you know what? Like, I probably don't need either of those pictures. So I can select both of them and delete both of those because that's not a good picture. And then delete Gemini photos. Yeah, I don't need either of those. I'll delete. That's something that,
that's huge.
Yeah. No, thanks. I like it, but I'm not going to subscribe. So yeah, the Gemini, it works. They have a Mac software too that I don't think is free, but this one is free. I like this picture because they're like deciding which picture
it's
to post
cute.
On Instagram.
Like, oh,
that's
God, of
looks
course
like they're
they
praying, but they're like, no, that one. No, that one. No, let's post that one.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah.
Nice.
Gemini. Try it.
And I have a way for you to add more photos so you can delete more photos.
Great. Great. Yeah.
It is a camera app. It's called Obscura. It's been around for a while, but they just released about a week ago Obscura 2. And I love this app. This is for serious photographers who want more control of their iPhone camera. It takes advantage of all the features in the iPhone. Let me get this out of the way so I can take a nice picture of the table. So let me show you the user interface. There's a scroll bar here that lets you play with a lot of different settings. I'll show you that in a second. But because we're really a more of a pro camera, whoa, we can also crash it. Let's bring that back. What happened there? I can set the shutter speed directly, manually. Of course, normally you'd probably use auto, but this is the point, is that if you need the controls, you might want them. I can set the ISO manually. Again, normally you'll leave it in auto. You can also choose different formats. So the phone normally takes in JPEG, but there's the high-efficiency image format, which Apple has pioneered and is on the iPhone X. There's Camera Raw, which means it's going to take every bit. You can use the depth camera, and it'll save all the depth information. It doesn't have a depth slider, but you can use other programs to do that as well. Here's a foliage filter.
Ooh.
There's a variety of filters. There's filter packs as well. I bought the black and white filter pack because that's really a nice thing to have. You have access to the zoom, but it's not as easy. So you should be aware that the Apple camera might be a little bit easier in terms of switching back and forth between the portrait mode. Here's the front-facing camera. But this is really not designed for speed. This is designed for power and capability. There's a grid. In fact, more than one grid. There's a variety of different grids you can have, including the golden mean. There is a level in here. A lot of people in the professional cameras will have a level so they get their horizon straight. You have a choice of flash, of course. That's just like the regular Apple camera. The timer. So this is a very powerful camera that lets you modify the focus manually. Manual focus. Isn't that cool?
Mm-hmm.
So if a camera's having a hard time getting that wood grain just right, you can do it manually. There's also manual exposure, and I already showed you ISO and shutter speed. So there's really a lot of capability in this. You probably wouldn't use it all the time. Notice I haven't replaced my Apple camera. You know, that's the go-to when I want to take a picture. But if I need more control or I want to save Camera Raw, this is a really great choice. Obscura 2, which just came out, and there's some new packs available. It is, as they say, a better camera. I really love it. Basically makes the iPhone into a professional quality camera, at least in terms of the settings and so forth. So if you need those settings, this is a great way to go.
I wish it would let you change it so that you could open it with the camera app.
Yeah, that's Apple. Mm-hmm. Apple doesn't let anybody do that. But again, I think in general, by the way, Ben Rice McCarthy, I was trying to remember his name, give Ben some credit. I was trying to, I think you're probably going to want to use the Apple camera 90% of the time. This is for people. Look at all the metadata you can get. This is really amazing. Very, very nice job, Ben. There are other, you know, that we've talked before about Halide, which is also an excellent camera. If you are doing, and there's the, you can see it's a couple of bucks for the extra filters. What is the price on Obscura 2? I can't remember. Is it $5?
$5.
Yeah, $4.99. So very well worth it. You might want Halide as well. I mean, they all do different things, but this is a very nice.
The metadata is really interesting too. I guess I downloaded.
Yeah, you get all the depth information is stored in there.
Yeah,
and you don't normally have access to that.
I think.
Well, look at that. Did you just buy that to kid?
I had bought it at some point to review it, and then never gotten around to it. So.
Well, I'm glad I brought it up.
I'm going to start using it because I need some help with my photography.
Well, the issue for me is, you know, I usually bring around a professional camera, but often I end up using the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is kind of a midway between a pro camera and just getting a little bit more out of the phone. And often that's really all I need,
You know,
just to get a little more out of the phone, a little more control over what's going on. And I do really love being able to get all the information about what's going on in the camera, all the EXIF and all that stuff. So there you have it.
Well,
nice.
I had lots of questions that I didn't get to. So you can still send me your questions, but if you would have already sent me your question, rest assured I will eventually get to it. Megan@twit.tv, that's how you can reach me, or Megan Maroney on Twitter. And if you want to come and be part of our studio audience, as our friends that are here are, that's tickets@twit.tv. That's how you get to be part of our studio audience. We love to have people here.
We do this show when Leo gets here, which is supposed to be 9 a.m. Pacific on Tuesdays, noon Eastern time, 1600 UTC. But sometimes I'm late. So Tune in at 9 and then, you know.
It's usually 9 a.m. Hawaii time.
Oh, thank you. I'm on Hawaii time. I am. I'm on Hawaii time. But do stop by and watch live. If you want to be in studio, we often get a nice studio audience for the show. Just email tickets@twit.tv. We'll put a chair out for you.
I just said that.
Did you just say that?
I did. I wasn't had to get listening. You back.
I was playing
using
with my
me
camera.
Not listening before.
I know. We're fair now. We're even now. Did you say that you can download on-demand versions of the show anytime you want at twit.tv/iOS?
Yes.
Did you mention that you can also subscribe in your favorite podcast app, Pocket Casts, Apple Podcasts, Google, whatever it is you use? In fact, if you subscribe, and there's audio and video in the subscription you get to choose, you'll always have it the minute it comes out. Mm-hmm. Isn't that nice?
And I just had one more thing to say, that those ads are following you. They are following you.
They're following you around. They are. And there's also a guy reading your email every day. He reads all your email. The Google man, the Gmail man. He's reading your email. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on iOS Today.